Maya means mercy, specific knowledge, and also illusion. Or Lord Bohr is everything. He is merciful, he is all knowledge, and he is illusion also. The sound which he vibrated as the Bohr incarnation was answered by the Vedic hymns of the great sages in the planets of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. The highest intellectual and pious living entities live in those planets. And when they heard the extraordinary voice of the Bohr, they could understand that the specific sound was vibrated by the Lord and no one else. Therefore, they replied by praying to the Lord with Vedic hymns. The earth planet was submerged in the mire. But on hearing the sound of the Lord, the inhabitants of the higher planets were all jubilant because they knew that the Lord was there to deliver the earth. Therefore, Brahma and all the sages, such as Bhrigu, Brahma's other sons, and learned Brahmanas, were enlivened, and they concertedly joined in praising the Lord with the transcendental vibrations of the Vedic hymns. The most important is the Brihad Naradiya Purana verse. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. A few things. Sometimes there's a confusion about are there four Vedas or are there three Vedas? You've heard that question before? This is how Jiva Goswami explains it in very simple terms. Originally, the Veda is one. And when Vyas divided the Vedas, Veda, Vyasa, Vyasa means division. So he divided the Vedas into four. One Veda became four Vedas, actually one Veda. The Vedas is one Veda. And the three are the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Veda. And then there were some remaining verses which became the Atharva Veda, the fourth Veda. And even after all of that, there were some remaining verses which then became, in different Sanskrit, in Laukika, instead of Alaukika Sanskrit, Vyasadeva made those remaining verses, this is described within the four Vedas, the fifth Veda. The fifth Veda, in the language of the Vedas, the four Vedas, is the Puranic section, the what is traditionally or conventionally called Smriti. There's Shruti, that's the four Vedas. And then there's the Smriti that explains the four Vedas. But texts, more than one, multiple texts in the four Vedas say the fifth Veda is actually part of the original one Veda. But it's given a different name, Smriti, because it's explaining the four and it's in different Sanskrit. Different Sanskrit meaning Laukika is Sanskrit that's less, and Alaukika Sanskrit is more complicated. And so, no surprise, intellectuals that know the Alaukika Sanskrit, they say, just see, this is, somebody else made this up. It's not part of the Vedas. It's modern composition. That's their take on it. And it's for people that are weaker in their intellect. It's for those people. And the real Veda is these four. That's commonly taught in educated circles because they have, like, you know, a franchise on the Vedas. You have to know this very difficult to know Sanskrit. Jiva Goswami sets the record straight, but back to the three Vedas or four Vedas, or for that matter, five Vedas. The fourth Veda, the Atharva Veda, Rig Sama Yajur, and Atharva Veda. The subject matter of the Atharva Veda includes things like what Sringhi did when he uttered a mantra to create a mystical snake bird that would kill Maharaj Parikshit. It's destruction kinds of mantras. Or what Vishwarup uttered to create Vritrasura, the demon that was to kill Indra. It's from that section of the Vedas. And so forth. Now, it's not like black arts or something like that. It's the Vedas. Because black arts are thing other than, you know. But, the Rig, Sama, and Yajur Veda, they're the three Vedas. As we know from Bhagavad Gita, amongst them, the Sama Veda is considered superlative. And it is superlative because of the sweetness of the meter and how its composition. It's not that the message of Sama Veda is different than the other messages. They have specific departments or sections within each of them. So this, I don't want to go too much further. But the whole picture of the Vedas, it can be said that the three Vedas in the Bhagavatam, in some places it does. And elsewhere it sometimes does. That's the meaning. Three Vedas, but four Vedas. Prabhupada didn't dwell on that distinction. He just commonly said the four Vedas. And it's perfectly correct to say the four Vedas, and the other is also perfectly correct. With the understanding that the Atharva Veda is also part of Vyasadeva's work of dividing the Vedas. The way that Jiva Goswami describes what Vyasadeva did, making reference to scriptures, is a really simple explanation. He says, supposing a king has treasury, and in his treasury there's jewels. And in previous ages before Kali Yuga, the Brahmanas were so qualified that they didn't need the Vedas to be divided. They could just reach into this treasury and select this one, select that one, select that one, select the other one for the purpose of whatever the yajna was that was required because they were so vastly learned. But in Kali Yuga, just like someone may be given the assignment by the king, put the diamonds over here and put the rubies over there and put the pearls over there and put the other ones over there. That's what Vyasa did. Because he was qualified to know which mantras go together and for for what purposes and so forth, and that's what he did. Very simple explanation. So the one Veda, the treasure house of the treasury of the king, just got sorted out into different likenesses of verses for the purpose that brahmanas in the age of Kali would have an easier time of knowing which verses to use. That's his explanation. And it's not just a creative idea. He gives reference to scripture that explains it. So, now the residence of mentioned here Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. It's in the Sanskrit, it's Jana, Tapa, Satya. So the residence of places. The verse made very clear in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, commonly people know the Rig Veda mantra that is the Gayatri mantra. Om Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svargaloka. Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, and Satyaloka. It doesn't identify in that mantra which planets are in those regions, but there are, without detailing, there are planets in those regions. The heavenly planets are above in this vertical dimension of the universe, just like the planets of this universe are within the stem of the lotus that upon which Brahma appears, so that's the topmost planet, Satyaloka or Brahmaloka, and then there's 13 other planetary systems below him. And there's 7 upper, 7 lower, making 14. So, the earth is in the Bhu Loka, Bhuvar Loka, Siddha Loka, and Rahu and Ketu and those other, they're in this other region. Then the heavenly planets, where the devas reside. And then there's 4 more above that. Brahmaloka is at the top, or Satyaloka, but Maharloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka. Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. So in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there is description by Sanatana Goswami what goes on in those places. And very quickly, my memory isn't really sharp on this one. Well, we'll go down. From Satyaloka, the one down from that is Tapaloka. The Tapaloka is a place for celibates. The 4 Kumaras sometimes visit there, and others, and their activity primarily to meditation and discussion of philosophy. A very, very high, just like chapter 87 of Canto 10 is prayers by the personified Veda. So it's that level of discussion. The Tapaloka folks, they're way up there, just before Brahmaloka. And then down, there's, and I can't remember which one. Does anybody know which one? Huh? Janaloka is next down. The Maharloka is the next down. Yes? So Maharloka is where celibate grihasthas reside. They don't have families, but they're married, and they're engaged in sacrifice. yajna. They're not interested in material prosperity. Worldly people are interested in material prosperity. They do yajnas for that purpose. And that's what the karma kanda section of the Vedas is about. How to do a yajna so you can get some material prosperity in this life, and after this life go to Swargaloka. The Red Maharloka, they're not interested in material prosperity. They're interested in seeing Lord Vishnu, because their consciousness is so elevated that when they are doing yajnas and uttering mantras, where the bhokta of the yajna is Vishnu, just as in the Satyaloka region and below, there is the same bhokta of the yajna, but these prabhus, they just want to see the form of Lord Vishnu, who emerges from the fire with hands extended and receives their offerings. So they like to have long yajnas. And as soon as the yajna is finished, Vishnu recedes into the fire, and they get ready for the next yajna. And so it's a place of sacrifice unto Vishnu. Sacrifice unto Vishnu is taught for people that are down here in Bhuloka. That sacrifice to Vishnu frees one from karma. They're already in that condition. They're just attracted to seeing Vishnu. And then there isn't a whole lot described of the planet, at least in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, of the planet just above them. Then it describes Sapaloka. So what is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita is at the time of cosmic annihilation, their partial annihilation, because there's multiple, but the two main ones are at the end of each day of Brahma, because in the morning, the next morning, Brahma does, he creates the part that was destroyed, but there's sort of the partial devastation. At the end of the day of Brahma, the partial devastation results in dry, the insufficient rain, and the lower planetary systems become very dry. And then from the mouths of Ananta comes fire, and the fire engulfs those lower planets, including the heavenly planets and below. And it's so hot that the Maharloka residents, they somehow travel to the Tapaloka region, and they're welcomed for that period of time of the night of Brahma, and then afterwards they go back down, because then in the morning Brahma recreates that place, recreates from the heavenly planets down, so they can go back because it's not so hot anymore. Something like that. But you know, their attraction is the principles of sacrifice. Then the last point is, they have this, they're not covered by Maya in the sense of the illusion feature of Maya, because they're not interested in, they're not attracted to enjoy the temporary with their senses. They're not attracted to that. They're beyond that. They still have bodies, because they're not at the standard of pure bhakti. Read again what Prabhupada writes. Maya. Ksha Yishnu Maya Maya Sukharasya. The word maya is very significant in this verse. Maya means mercy. specific knowledge and also illusion. So the residents of these higher planets, they weren't under the whammy of illusion, because illusion is the result of turning attention away. Bahir Mukha Jeev, the living entity, turning attention away from the Supreme. Now, they're not perfected beings. Otherwise, they'd be in Vaikuntha. But their attention is towards the Supreme. It's something akin to the stage of Nishtha. In the stage of Nishtha, the coverings of the soul are practically, in the language of the Bhagavatam, nearly gone. Nearly gone means there's still some residual trace, but the force of bhakti is so strong they don't manifest. Clear? Some residual covering, just like, say, clouds in the sky. When there's very light clouds in the sky, there's still clouds in the sky, but they're not sufficient to block the light of the sun. But it's different than if it's a cloudless sky. Something like that. Nishtha stage. Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttamashloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Naishtaki, that nishtha, same dhatu, same root. Practically, the language, the translation is practically destroyed. Not fully destroyed. Well, how come? Because it's just a stage. Keep going and it's fully destroyed. The abhadras are fully destroyed. But there's a stage where they're... So there's a stage for these residents of these higher planets. They're not ready for Vaikuntha yet. But they're qualifying themselves to become residents of Vaikuntha by this method and that method, and then the topmost is Brahmaloka. So when they hear this tumultuous roar, they're not fearful. They just by that sound vibration they can understand, and they reply. They reply in a fitting manner. The fitting manner is they offer Vedic hymns from the three Vedas. Not for the purpose of getting something material, as is done in the lower, below those planets, to get something. So the advice of the Bhagavatam is, and Bhagavad Gita, one shouldn't neglect prescribed duties, because neglect of, like Arjuna, neglect of his prescribed duty would result in sin. When he was arguing, if I do my duty, I'll incur sin. But so he got course adjustment by saying that duty is to satisfy Vishnu. And then killing, which shouldn't be done, is free from sin because it's dharma yuddha. Anyway, so that's dharmasya, canto 1, chapter 2. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. Dharma, prescribed duty or yajna, sacrifice, chanting of hymns, it means certainly, should be for upavarga. Upavarga means liberation. Pa varga is karmakanda. Pa varga is the path of fruitive activities. And upavarga is the path of liberation. So dharma should be performed for the purpose of ultimate salvation, or ultimate salvation means devotional service, pure devotional service. Dharma should be performed for that purpose. We're not required to do rituals. Our primary is this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And if we do that, there's no, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. And if you think, well, I'm doing all this devotional service, but what about this ritual, that ritual, and expectations of family members that I'm supposed to do these dharmic things, like my grandmother says, I'm, shame on you. And just in case you have that doubt, oh, you're being neglectful of some ritual that you're supposed to do, aham tvam sarva papi bhyo moksha yashami ma suchaha. So we may do some rituals. That's not a difficulty. Those rituals, if done, should be done for the satisfaction of Vishnu only. So they're chanting that they're doing Vedic activity, not for the purpose of getting something, but for the purpose of satisfying Vishnu. And then there's the platform, there's the Vaikuntha platform. The Vaikuntha platform or Goloka platform. Krishna is more pleased by the loving words of his devotees in Vrindavan than all the Vedic hymns. That there's statements to that effect. It's the glory of Vraja Bhakti. If the goal is to please Krishna, then let's find out what is most pleasing to Krishna and strive for that. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. So, but, you know, here this is Lord Varaha. He is an avatar of Vishnu, ultimately an avatar of Krishna, and he's pleasing all kinds of people because he pleases all kinds of people, including Braja Prema Bhaktas. You know, just see how wonderful is my Krishna. He's doing this. So, and one last point is, although they're residents way up here, they're concerned about residents down here. Because they're not demigods. The demigods, obviously, they have, and their services, the functioning of the universe, at least the part of the universe that's below them. And when the earth falls out of orbit, that's a disaster. It's not just like, you know, somebody blew up something over there. The whole earth planet fell out of orbit. Into the language here is submerged in the mire. So they're concerned, although they're not demigods, and they're not interested in material enjoyment. They're not interested in senses contacting sense objects for material happiness. They're beyond that. That's the heavenly planets and below. They're beyond that. But they're also concerned about the earth planet. So they're feeling joyful hearing the sound because they know what it means. He didn't, you know, come before them and say, you know what? Your concern about the earth planet is so nice, I'm going to go save the... He didn't have that conversation. Just hearing that sound, they knew what it meant. He's going to save, rescue the earth planet, however he does it. I'm sure it'll be wonderful. Persons, so compassion, yesterday evening, ahimsa, was our value, the Bhagavatam value that we discussed. Here they are, these residents are, they're very concerned, compassionate towards Mother Earth and the inhabitants of Mother Earth who are depending upon the necessities of life that Mother Earth supplies. And they're very pleased although they're not maintainers of the universe, they're not demigods. When you're detached, it doesn't mean you don't care. And when you care, you do something. And they're doing something. They're doing what is suited for them. When one becomes an elevated Vaishnav, when that wonderful day comes that we become an elevated Vaishnav, keep working on it, Prabhu. We want to get there. When you become an elevated Vaishnav, it doesn't mean you don't care anymore. Let people rot. That's the liberationists that are impersonalists, but a Vaishnav will not do that. Now, there may be a part of a Vaishnav's life that detachment is extreme, like Gorkishore Das Babaji, for example. Detachment to the extreme, radical, extreme, like, whoa. But it's not that he didn't have compassion. One of the things that he didn't want to go to that hell named Calcutta, that when his followers, including Bhaktisiddhanta, requested him, he was losing his eyesight, and go to, there's no suitable optician here in Navadvip, go to Calcutta, I won't go to that hell of Calcutta. And he just disappeared for some period of time. No one knew where he went. Then he came back in what's called the pastime of blindness. At the same time, before his departure, he requested Bhaktisiddhanta to establish a preaching mission. Interesting. He wasn't expecting that elevated body must be like me. He went and sat at the feet of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a grahastha with 10 children, and heard. And he requested Bhaktisiddhanta to establish the mission, which he did as in the order of his spiritual master and his father. It's Krishna conscious to respect differences, even of differences of mood and emphasis and things like that. As long as there's not offense, differences of mood are fine. No, it takes some refined intelligence to make a distinction between what's a difference and what's an offense. Just speaking principle. We can say on the one hand that Krishna, because it's right in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is more pleased by the love of the residents of Vrindavan than though the hearing the exalted prayers offered to him by the hymns of the Vedas. And to say that doesn't mean, oh, those that are offering hymns to the Vedas, poo-poo on them. We don't do that. They're wonderful according to their disposition of devotion. It doesn't dislodge our regard and respect for them, nor does it dislodge our regard or respect for what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. We continue to set our sights for that which is very high, but the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the most pleasing thing to Krishna, the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And so we like to hear about the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And we don't have any opposition to hearing Bhagavad Gita. That's an important lesson that Prabhupada presents right off in the very beginning of the Krishna Katha, Chapter 7, Canto 1. We don't just go to Gopi Gita. We hear everything. because it's Krishna. Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna and Krishna. The whole 10 to 12 cantos of the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Ramayana and everything, because it's meant for the same purpose, awakening our dormant loving attraction and service mood. So let's see if there's some discussion. You have something? Yeah?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful class. This is about the Shrutis and Smritis you discussed in the beginning. So you said that even the Smritis are part of Vedas, the original Veda.
I was repeating Jiva Goswami, just a little editing. Yes, I did say that.
Yeah.
On the authority of Jiva Goswami saying that. Go ahead.
So Smriti also consists Puranas and Itihasas.
Yes.
Which are histories.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So histories keep updating.
What's that?
Histories keep updating, like there will be...
Well, you say histories keep updating. What do you mean by that?
I mean, there can be addition to the histories, like for example now, Srila Prabhupada's pastime could be a divine leela.
Well, which that's not exactly Veda. That's not exactly Purana. The Puranas are compositions of Vyas. And the Itihasas, Vyas and Valmiki, they're counted. Now Valmiki, that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, these literatures are not being updated. The pastimes of Lord Rama are eternal. And Valmiki manifested them in a written form. So, it's not updated histories.
And what about Mahabharata? Mahabharata, which is also called Panchama Veda in some places.
Yeah, well, here's my understanding of the Mahabharata, which is part of the Itihasa section. Two things. The pastimes of Krishna recycle. And so their pastimes are actually eternal. And the manifesting by Vyas is just of something that's eternal. And so it's not a new history. It's just a repeat, a rerun of something that's very ancient. So, second is, when there's a rerun, there's variation. So it's not that every time Krishna appears with the Pandavas, it's exactly the same. They say the exact words, they do the exact same things. It's not like that. That's my understanding. That variety is the mother of enjoyment. So diverse themes and rasas that are being manifested, exchanges of love between Krishna and others, and including the demons. They're variegatedness in Krishna's pastimes in Mahabharata in different versions. And therefore. There are authentic versions in addition to Vyasadeva's composition of Mahabharata. Brihat Bhagavatamrita commentary, sounds like you've read it, Gopi Pranadatta makes that clear. In one sense, the description of what's taking place between Janamejaya and the narrator of this history is a little different than Vyasadeva's Mahabharata. There's authentic versions of Ramayana other than Valmiki Ramayana. That's a little like 201 or 301, but you know, the main point is they're not, it's not a new history. It's a rerun of ancient history being manifest in cycles of time.
So the extension to this is how do we consider Chaitanya Charitamrita and other literatures which are written by...
Well, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's a nice question, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. And how do we regard Chaitanya Charitamrita? Is it fall in the category of itihasa? That's your question. Yes? One could argue, yes. One might argue, no. Because it's not a composition of Vyas. One could argue no. That is to say, that according to what Jiva Goswami writes in Tattva Sandarbha, the Mahabharata and the Puranas, the Itihasas and the Puranas, they're from the original Veda, the one Veda. And there's some remaining verses, and he just transposes the Sanskrit into a different Sanskrit that's more accessible. But it's from the original Veda, the original one Veda. So one could argue no, and one could argue yes. Okay? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, go ahead and tell somebody else.
So my next question is about the systems of philosophy, the six systems of philosophy. Which are...
This fellow's a scholar. You're way over the head of some of these people here. Go ahead.
So when we say about these six systems of philosophy, these are not directly by Vyasa, but they seem to be like explanation of explanation what these sages realized after reading the literature of Vyasadeva. So is it a right understanding, Maharaj?
Well, kind of. Let me edit a little bit. Five of them are atheistic. So, Vedic. It's their rendering of the Vedas from an atheistic vantage point. And they take the statements of the Vedas, each one of them, and say, this is how to understand the statement of the Vedas. It's teaching, so there's a certain doctrine and they follow the doctrine. There's rules and they follow the rules of doctrine. The Karma Mimamsa doctrine, for example. Or the Nyaya doctrine, or the, you know, the different doctrines. So, they take the whole of the Vedas, looked at through a lens of a certain doctrine, and render everything according to that doctrine to support their doctrine. And behind it is atheism. Five of them. And then there's Vyasa's explanation in Vedanta Sutra, which, at least from the Gaudiya perspective, it's a certain perspective. And that certain perspective, you know, Lord Chaitanya had his perspective on Vyasa's perspective. But, you know, there's a name for his perspective. Yeah. Shakti Parinamavad, the doctrine of everything is Shakti. It's an energy of and transformation of the energies of the source of all energies. That's his doctrine. So that's one of the six. Of course, there are different systems of looking at what those six are and so forth. Scholars have to differ. That's just what scholars do. But for sure, at least five of the six are atheistic, and they're not Vedic. It's just they're what I said it is. And is that okay? Did you understand all of that? No? I'll try to. They're traditionally, I'll say it two different ways. Prabhupada said, any modern philosophy, it's nothing new. It's just a restatement or mixing of these six doctrines. And these six doctrines are very ancient, and five of them at least come after the Vedas were manifest, after Vyasadeva divided the Vedas into four. They're renderings of understanding the Vedas. A very common one for us is karma mimamsa philosophy. Karma mimamsa philosophy means Krishna argues it to Nanda Maharaj at the time of the Indra Yajna that he was planning, and Krishna gave karma mimamsa argument. Not that he wanted his father to accept the karma mimamsa perspective, but karma mimamsa is one of the six, and it says whether there's God or not, it doesn't really matter. Because even if there's God or Ishvara, above him is the law of karma. He has to administer according to the law of karma. He's bound by that which is higher than him. And so just do good work. And you don't need to worship Indra. You don't need to worship anybody. Just do good work. So there's a whole doctrine that says that's what the Vedas say, karma mimamsa. How to do good work. Just do, and that's what the Vedas are teaching. That's one of the six. And then there's details and details and details and details and details and up and down and sideways and backwards and forwards, and it's a whole system of understanding the Vedas. And then there's others that are whole systems. You know, one of them is what modern mechanistic scientists say, and that is Kanada gave what is called the atomic theory, and the modern scientists just say it in their own way, but all there is matter and the laws that govern matter, and there isn't anything else. And the Vedas are teaching that. There's no need for God. It's just matter, the laws governing matter, and that's it. Atomic theory. Everything is particles. And don't ask where particles come from. That's just everything. That's the source of everything, is particles of matter. And there are laws that are inherent in matter that govern matter. And that's it. And that's what the Vedas are teaching. So that's another doctrine. Etc. And this is an oversimplification, but you can read about it if you like. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It kind of summarizes what these doctrines are. And then there's people that you will meet, or you may meet, that they studied under somebody that knew this doctrine. They may not even known what the doctrine that, you know, the founder of that doctrine. It may just be a modern guy that, you know, lines himself up with that doctrine, whether he even knows it or not. There's some people that know it, and etc. But you know, the foundation is the Vedas, and there's different perspectives on the Vedas, known by these six doctrines. So they were present during Krishna's time, which is really ancient. Karma mimamsa philosophy. You know, when did Vyasadeva divide the Vedas into four? during the time of Krishna. They were contemporaries. Yes? They were contemporaries. But this teaching is very ancient, so that somebody wrote it all down. And it got the name. He didn't necessarily call it Karma Mimamsa, but then in its written form, that's what it looked like. But it's like perspectives on the absolute truth. And then there are modern persons that articulate with reference to the Vedas, this is the perspective. This is the correct perspective. And then they have a school and they teach it. So Jiva Goswami, before he went to Vrindavan, he was just a young fellow. He got trained up by Lord Nityananda to go visit the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, and he sent him to go study the six doctrines under a Vaishnava teacher that knew the six doctrines and Lord Chaitanya's teaching. So he was ready to face anybody that had, there was a proponent of this or that or the other. He knew what the doctrines were. He knew the counter to those doctrines from a Vaishnava, a Lord Chaitanya brand of Vaishnavism perspective. Then he went to Vrindavan and he did what he did. He knew his audience. People that are atheists and really like skilled at it. And so when he wrote, he knew his audience. So when he wrote the Sandarbhas, this is, anyway, I'm going beyond. When he wrote the Sandarbhas, in one sense, it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. But Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, so it's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And when he was writing, he knew these six doctrines. He knew the pot shots that scholarly people would take at explaining things in the way that Lord Chaitanya explained things. He knew. He wasn't an ordinary kind of like a nice writer. So when he said something, he knew what the opponents would say. So he said something. He supported it with statements from the Bhagavatam. And then he would say some arguing people would object and say blah blah blah, and to that blah 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 person, here's the response. You know, that's how he constructed Tattva Sandarbha. Excuse me, how he constructed the six Sandarbhas, dealing with, you know, these six doctrine people out there, and it was really high level. So for our modern Hare Krishna followers, you know, we can't get everything without being more qualified than we are. But he's making statements, and he doesn't drill down on it and say, you know, it's essences. For a highly qualified audience. But he's giving essences that are explaining Srimad Bhagavatam, which is explaining Vedanta. It's like a very powerful literature. But he knew those six doctrines very well. And then he went off to Vrindavan. Served under Rupa Goswami and assisted Rupa Goswami and then carried on as the next acharya in the line. Fantastic personality. But that's just his question about the six darshans. If you like, when you sometime you go home, you can look up six darshans. And then you'll find it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it gives like a mini explanation of what the names of the proponents of the six and essentially what they have to say. It's just a perspective on the Vedas, or their perspective on the Absolute Truth, perspective on Vedanta Sutra. So they wrote their commentaries. And they have their school, they have their followers. Okay. It's 8:15, 8:13. I think we're going to end. And any, like, someone has a burning question they want to ask?
Modern-day philosophers are also writing their own philosophy,
yeah,
falling under any of these categories.
Well, go ahead.
So they are, they have no knowledge of the Vedas.
No. They have cursory knowledge of the Vedas. I mean, for example, the swastika. Where'd that come from? It came from the Vedas. Somebody over there that was connected to Adolf Hitler knew something about the Vedas. They're persons that were learned, scholarly types of people that knew something about the Vedas. You know, who knows what school and who knows anything. But there was a period of time in Europe where there was a big interest in the Vedas. So they were kind of cherry picking over here and over there. And so strands of these six doctrines find their way into European philosophies and philosophers' thinking. Some. So they just like rewrote their perspective on. No, what procedure they followed, I don't know. You know, did they go and study under somebody that knew this school or that school, or I don't know. I don't know what the procedure they followed, but there was an interest. Even to learn the Sanskrit to read the Vedas, they had to have a teacher to learn the Sanskrit to read the Vedas. So that's the root from which different philosophies of modern times, that was your remark, has some root, some origin in that root, whether they know it or not, consciously or not. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.